Earth Sky.
Welcome to Earth Sky 22, 22 minutes of science, interviews, and great music from Austin, Texas. I'm Jorge Salazar. Here's a scientist soundbite.
Jupiter has been moving toward the east in front of the star background. On October 4th, it's going to change direction and start moving toward the west in front of the star background. And that change of Jupiter's direction in front of the stars just confounded the ancient astronomers. Like, they had no idea why that was happening. But of course, now we know that Jupiter and Earth are both planets in orbit around the sun. And what happens is that once a year, we pass between Jupiter and the sun.
That's Sky Watcher Deborah Bird. More with her later, but first, Science News of the Week with Michael Brennan and Emily Howard.
Wildfires have burned throughout the western United States for months. Major blazes first emerged in New Mexico in May, then began to turn up in Colorado and Idaho in large numbers. Most recently, fires have surged in California and Washington. According to NASA, the 2012 wildfire season will likely break the U.S. record for most acres burned. For more information and satellite images, come to earthsky.org.
A magnitude 8.6 earthquake on April 11th set in motion an unprecedented increase in global seismic activity. Large earthquakes can alter seismicity patterns across the globe in very different ways, according to two new studies by U.S. Geological Survey seismologists. Both studies shed light on more than a decade of debate on the origin and prevalence of remotely triggered earthquakes. For more, come to earthsky.org and search earthquake.
A new study indicates that physical activity may be one effective tool for the prevention of mental health problems in adolescents. The researchers found that adolescents who were physically inactive or who perceived their bodies as either too fat or too thin were at greater risk for both internalizing problems, such as depression or anxiety, and externalizing problems, such as aggression or substance abuse. Adolescents who participated in organized sports, on the other hand, were at lower risk for mental health problems. This article was published in the Journal of the Association for Psychological Science.
Like photographers assembling a portfolio of their best shots, astronomers have assembled a new, improved portrait of our deepest ever view of the universe. Called the Extreme Deep Field, or XDF, the photo was assembled by combining 10 years of Hubble Space Telescope observations taken of a patch of sky within the original Hubble Ultra Deep Field. Check out the amazing image and video at earthsky.org. That's our science news of the week. I'm Emily Howard.
And I'm Michael Brennan. Song of the Week is by My Jerusalem. It's off their upcoming release. This song is called Preachers, from the album titled Preachers, out October 9th.
Full of lies, but I'll tell you what I could get paid. As long as
Find us as EarthSky on Facebook, EarthSky Science on Twitter, and at earthsky.org. Deborah Bird brings us news of the global night sky, a great time to observe the moon. Welcome, Deborah.
Hey, Jorge. The moon and the planet Jupiter. So the moon, of course, is full on around the 29th or 30th, depending on where your clock is on the globe. So if you're hearing this on September 29th, the full moon is tonight in North America, and that's the legendary harvest moon. So wonderful harvest moon. We talked more about that last week, and it's a beautiful moon. It's the name for the full moon closest to the autumnal equinox. It's not really bigger or brighter or yellower than other full moons, but you might think it is because you are likely to see it when it's low in the sky, not just on Saturday night, but also Sunday night and even Monday night. You might see that full-looking moon shortly after sunset, looking very bright and beautiful and more golden in color than when you see it overhead, due to the fact that you're looking through a greater thickness of Earth's atmosphere.
Yeah, it's a great time to howl at the moon, a full moon, September 29th. Usually, full moons aren't such a good time to see what's around the moon, is it?
Well, no. If you're looking with the sky through a telescope, you don't want to be looking around the time of full moon. But the moon is great for helping you identify planets and bright stars in the night sky. So as the moon starts to wane, which it'll be doing early this week, so around October 1st, 2nd, 3rd, all of that time the moon will be past full. The moon will be waning. By the morning of, or by the night of October 4th, there's going to be what's called a waning gibbous moon. So that's a moon that's more than half lighted, but less than full. And it's going to be coming up late at night by that time, because the moon does come up a little bit later every day. And so that moon on October 4th is going to be close to one of the brightest planets in the sky, the planet Jupiter.
Awesome. So how late are we talking about here?
Well, if you look around the middle of the night, and I'm not like a night person so much anymore, Jorge, so, you know, that's pretty late for me. I get up early, but midnight, if you look by midnight, you're going to see the moon and Jupiter on October 4th close together in the eastern sky, just ascending into the sky. If you're more like me and you get up early, early in the morning before dawn, then you'll see the moon and Jupiter together on the morning of October 5th high in the sky. And I'm identifying those dates, October 4th and October 5th, but really any time around those dates, as long as it's dark outside and as long as it's sometime between midnight and dawn, you'll see Jupiter near the moon. And you'll easily pick out Jupiter because it's really bright. And it's the brightest thing up there until Venus rises a few hours before the sun.
Yeah, that's the thing to look for, I think, this week is Jupiter. Usually not so easy to find, but the moon will help us out to find it. And tell us a little bit more about this retrograde motion. What is all that about?
Well, on October 4th, Jupiter is going to begin its retrograde motion. And that retrograde motion just means that the planets all move generally toward the east in our sky. Retrograde motion means they're moving in a different direction. They're moving toward the west in our sky. And when I say in our sky, I don't mean across the course of a single night. I mean in front of the star background. So Jupiter has been moving toward the east in front of the star background. On October 4th, it's going to change direction and start moving toward the west in front of the star background. And that change of Jupiter's direction in front of the stars just confounded the ancient astronomers. Like, they had no idea. Yeah, they had no idea why that was happening. But of course, now we know that Jupiter and Earth are both planets in orbit around the sun. And what happens is that once a year, we pass between Jupiter and the sun. And some weeks or months before we do that, depending on which planet it is, we see the planet begin to exhibit this retrograde motion. What's happening, Jorge, is that it's as if you're in a car on the highway and you're passing a slower car right next to you. And you look out the window and you have this illusion for just a second that the slower car is actually moving backwards. So retrograde motion is just like that. It's as if Jupiter is moving backwards in its orbit. And so we know that when Jupiter, we astronomers know that when Jupiter begins its retrograde motion, that means that something's about to happen. And what's about to happen is that Earth is about to pass between Jupiter and the sun. And we will be passing between Jupiter and the Sun in early December of 2012.
And that is the best time to see this planet Jupiter.
It is. Jupiter's always bright, but it's really great to see it around the time that we pass between it and the Sun, because when that happens, Jupiter is opposite the Sun in our sky, and therefore when the Sun goes down in the west every night, Jupiter rises in the east at a very convenient time for viewing for those of us who don't stay up super late. So Jupiter rises in the east at sunset, and it's visible to everyone around the globe. So it's very, very visible.
And I understand that this week is also, starting this week, is a good time to see some other things around the moon as well.
Jupiter right now happens to be in front of the constellation Taurus. And Taurus is a very prominent constellation. Of course, Taurus is the bull. Jupiter is near the red star Aldebaran. Aldebaran marks the eye of the bull, the fiery red eye of the bull in the constellation Taurus. And Aldebaran is located in a V-shaped, like the letter V, a pattern of stars in the letter V. That pattern of stars is an actual star cluster called the Hyades. And so Jupiter is close to Aldebaran now, which means it's close to the Hyades star cluster. You don't need a telescope to see this. You can see the Hyades with the unaided eye. And of course, you can see Aldebaran with the unaided eye because it's one of the brightest stars in the sky. And Jupiter is going to be close to those patterns on the sky's dome over the next several months. So if you were to draw it, or if you were to just notice where Jupiter is with respect to Aldebaran and where Jupiter is with respect to that V-shaped pattern over the next few months, you could actually see Jupiter move toward the west, and by that I mean toward the direction of the sunset. If you were to observe that, you could actually see Jupiter change its direction again. You could see it begin in around late January of 2013 to start moving toward the east again. So if you were to do that, Jorge, you'd be doing the same thing that the ancient astronomers did when they first noticed the retrograde motion of the planets.
That's if you're staying up late.
Well, actually, you'll be able to see it by December. Jupiter's going to be rising earlier and earlier. So by December, Jupiter will be coming up when the sun sets. Right now, in the month of October 2012, you do have to stay up late to see Jupiter. So you'd have to be up like around midnight, and you'll see Jupiter ascending in the eastern sky close to the moon around the nights of October 4th.
Yeah, if you can't sleep, maybe it's a good time to maybe pull out the telescope, and maybe the Jupiter light will help you catch some sleep.
Yeah, you can catch some Z's thanks to Jupiter.
Thanks, Deborah.
Thank you, Jorge.
Earth Sky's Deborah Bird. And we're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science. Sky. We interview the world's top scientists. A 5,300-year-old mummy has turned up what scientists are calling the world's oldest known red blood cells. That's according to research published in Interface by the Journal of the Royal Society. The article is called Preservation of 5,300-Year-Old Red Blood Cells in the Iceman. The Iceman is an exquisitely preserved mummy discovered in 1991 frozen in a glacier. It was found by two hikers in the Ahrtal Alps, along the border of Austria and Italy. Since then, scientists have analyzed the Iceman for clues of how he lived and how he died, apparently shot by an arrow in the back. This new study in May of 2012 claims to have found evidence of intact red blood cells, the oldest yet known. On the line to talk more about the findings is Marek Janko, a professor of material sciences at the Center for Nanosciences in Munich, Germany. Mr. Janko, welcome.
Hello.
What are the main findings of your study of what's being described as the world's oldest known blood cells?
Well, our main finding is that red blood cells can be preserved for 5,300 years and even detected after such a long time.
I mean, this is an amazing announcement. How were the blood cells recognizable? I mean, how did you know you had red blood cells on this mummy that's 5,300 years old? What's the evidence? Tell us more.
Okay, so the idea was, first of all, to collect samples, which means tissue, from the mummy wounds. And the Iceman is known for several reasons, because the mummy is extremely well preserved, but also because it seems to be the oldest known victim of a violent death in history. And it is also known that the mummy shows several wounds, for example, one at his right hand and another one on his back, where an arrowhead entered and presumably killed him. And knowing this, we tried to extract some samples from this wound tissue and used the so-called atomic force microscope, in short AFM, in order to really have a three-dimensional image of the particles with really high resolutions, having particles with the right size, the right shape, and the right structure. We then carried on so-called Raman spectroscopy measurements, and with this we then really could determine the molecular fingerprint of the particles, showing that we are really dealing with red blood cells.
Yeah, I just was hoping you might be able to give us an overview of why scientists are doing this. Why are scientists looking at these remains, such as of the Iceman?
Sure. Okay, so those remains can really give us some information about our ancestors, not only telling us what people used to eat in former times, but even what type of, for example, disease they had. And those information can even bring us further or improve our knowledge, not only about the diseases, but make it possible, for example, to create some medicines, some drugs against different types of disease, by knowing how they evolved, what type of evolution they went through.
Were there any new clues as to what killed this Iceman?
Okay. So by analyzing the red blood cells, if somebody is injured, he cuts, somebody cuts himself or whatever, a blood clot is created around this wound in order to stop the blood loss. But after a while, the fibrin as well as the blood clot are degraded and the tissue is just normally repaired. Due to this time difference, we were able to distinguish between the younger wound and the older wound. And because of the finding of fibrin, and fibrin is a characteristic protein for the coagulation of blood, we are pretty sure that the arrowhead wound was, let's say, the last or one of the last wounds he suffered from.
What's the most important thing you want people today to know about this new evidence of the world's oldest known blood cells?
Well, I think it's as basic as it could be, that red blood cells can be preserved after 5,300 years, and that science is, let's say, good enough to identify them, even after such a long period of time.
You've been listening to material scientist Marek Janko. We're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science. And that's our show. Thank you for joining us. This week's show was recorded at the Earth Sky Studios in Austin, Texas, the live music capital of the world. Our producer is Michael Brennan. Special thanks this week to our musical contributors. For more information on the science and the music you heard this week, visit our website at earthsky.org. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
There are too many artists, too much art, and not enough genius, I believe. Science is the art of the next stage. There are so many artists, too much heart, and not enough reason, I'm afraid. Silence is the song of the next stage. But what we don't know won't hurt us.
What we don't know won't keep us up at night. What we don't know won't hurt us. But we don't know, but we don't know, but we don't. What you don't know won't hurt ya. What you don't know won't end is terrifying. What you don't know won't hurt ya. But you don't know, but you don't know, but you don't. Of the next stage. But you won't know, but you won't know, but you won't know.